I'm bringing it down early, as is my wont.
I appreciate it, man.
I can't. You have to do that. I'm sorry. Like, I listen to a lot of podcasts lately because my new car doesn't have a headphone jack, so I can't listen to Sirius anymore. I cannot tell you how many podcasts start with like 45 seconds, even a minute of music, and I can just imagine the guy sitting there, headphones on, behind the mic. He's got the board dead, and he's just rocking out to the song. Like, yeah, they're really digging this at home. No, they're not. They're not listening to music radio, goddammit. They're listening for you. So that's why I'm talking fast. This is Papa's football podcast. This is dirty, by the way. I can be very dirty.
I hate having to go clean on your regular show.
I don't mind it. I find it profesionale, as they say in Espanol. But it is what it is. Papa's football podcast. I'm John Papagiorgio. He over there, he is Howard Flood. Show's website is pfpod.com. Go there for all of our episodes, and you can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes.
We're blogging more regularly now, once a week at least, so check out the site.
Yeah, please click on the articles before they die a dog's death on Reddit. Fuck Reddit. Fuck Reddit and its hatred of all things that aren't Gone Wild posts.
It's annoying because we're getting hits. People are clicking on shit from Reddit. It's just the moderators get pissed, man.
Yeah, screw you. Screw you, you little bureaucrats. We hate you. We openly hold you in contempt. No one's listening to this show. It'll never get back to them, so we can be as bold as we want to be.
Hey, we got good traffic, man. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Actually, we do. We for what this show is, it gets pretty decent traffic. It might completely lack an iTunes rating, so if you are listening to this show, talking about you really profound, goddammit, go on iTunes, go on Stitcher, give us a 5-star rating, please. Please, dude, please. I've sent mail to your house. That's how close we are. Please, do that for me. All right, well, the dirty little secret of this show bit us in the ass hard last week. As hard as it's going to bite you.
I guess we do have to lead with an apology of sorts to the Redskins. I'm sorry, to Colt McCoy.
Yeah, look, you don't have to apologize. Even Colt's parents were like, shit, we didn't see this coming. We record the shows Monday afternoon. It's a nice little schedule we have going. I'm happy with it. Howard's happy with it. We're both bums. So we just stroll in here at noon. Like, oh, God, this is a bit of a hassle getting here from noon to 3 in the middle of a Monday.
Mondays are a pain, man. Come on.
That is what it is to be a man-child. So we come in, and of course, like everyone else, we predict that the Redskins are going to be decimated by Dallas, in Dallas.
Despite your loyalty to said Redskins.
I love them. But yeah, DeMarco Murray, that's it, right?
Yeah.
There's what's his face, who was traded where? DeMarcus Ware, DeMarco Murray. It all blurs together. And then who the Eagles lose this week, DeMeco or some crap. I can't keep track of these made-up names.
You clearly have never worked in a ghetto emergency room.
Oh, I have. I go, you, boy, that's a big hit. Yeah, DeMeco Ryans for the Eagles. He's gone. Yes, I say, you there with the dreadlocks, do this for me. There's a nickel with your name on it, boy. Yeah, so the Redskins pull off not just the improbable, almost the impossible. They march in with a third-string quarterback to Dallas, who at the time I think was 6-1, and that was that the top record in the NFC?
It was tied for the lead in the I guess they for a brief moment could have had like outright first possession first place in the NFC East.
Okay.
So they were definitely doing much better before the Redskins game.
Somehow the Redskins win. Gets me to buy into the entire season. I had already quit mentally on the Redskins, and I was in a happy place. I could check into some games. I didn't have to really care. Like, the Redskins lose. If they've lost a lot, Howard, and you don't care about the season, you're like, whatever. You know, like, it's, again, to quote our black audience, it's like 12 years a slave. Like, the first time that dude had the living shit whipped out of him, he was probably like, that was fucking awful. I really wouldn't like that to happen to me again. The 50th time it happens, you're like, yeah, fucking hurry it up. I want to get back to dinner. You know, let's do this thing, goddammit. That's what the Redskins season is. Like, loss number one, you're just like, fucking shit. We won the preseason. Look at all the trades we
You're
made.
You're terrible. You're so terrible.
We are so on top of this shit. What happened? When they're like 1-5, though, you're just like, fucking pile it on. I just lose so I can watch the fucking 4 p.m. game already. I'm done with this. I'm done.
See, the mediocrity of the Redskins is the reason I despise that team for polluting my television with bad games. I'm so tired of having their garbage on television when there are clearly much better games going on at 1 o'clock.
But they that Monday night game was insane. That game was stunning. That is the I'm not saying this as a Redskins fan, as a football fan, that was the best Monday night game this year so far.
Come on, Tony Romo goes down with an injury and it's Brandon Whedon versus Colt McCoy.
Yes.
Get the fuck out of here.
The Browns quarterbacks have their revenge. It's a Browns world, baby. They square off against each other. Washington wins in overtime. I don't give a shit who's playing.
You need to leave. Like, I can't believe you just said that. I refuse to acknowledge that being a game between two professional football teams.
Did you not pay attention to what was trending on Facebook, like, the whole next day? It was nothing but Redskins and Colt McCoy shit, dude.
It was an exciting game that doesn't make it a good one.
Okay, then it was the most exciting Monday night football game. I don't know what the fuck metric you want to measure a football game by.
I want to see two teams that I believe can win the Super Bowl, and Brandon Whedon and Colt McCoy do not make playoff quarterbacks.
Nah, man. Football is measured gladiator style. Are you not entertained? And I was.
Okay, good for you.
I was thoroughly entertained.
I laughed. I definitely laughed many a time during that game, but it was not always a good thing.
Well, I was prepared to come on here completely high. Again, they win like that. I'm all in for week one, or all in for week eight, whatever the fuck it is we're on. All in. Completely every loss forgotten, every shred of dysfunction faded from my memory. They were going to march into Minnesota and crush ass.
You brought back your RG3 hope poster?
No, don't get me wrong. I was fucking livid that RG3 was starting.
Interesting.
Like, I believe you keep him on the bench through the bye week, you start him afterward. There have been reports from Britt McHenry, who used to be the piece of ass on Channel 9 in this area. She's now with ESPN.
Okay.
There have been reports that the decision to put him into the game was one that came from on high.
He played well.
He wasn't the reason they lost. He did not play spectacularly well.
I just don't see how you could pretend that Colt McCoy has a real shot. I went to Texas, by the way, people, but I don't see how you can pretend he has a real shot to be a viable playoff quarterback in the NFL when RG3, though it was a brief moment, yes, two seasons ago, has shown that of any quarterback on that roster, he's the only one with the potential to take the Redskins into the playoffs.
I think it's because as Americans, we believe in a meritocracy. At least we say we do. The rich guys don't. They know the game's rigged. But us dumb poor people, we believe that it's all merit. And there's something gritty about Colt McCoy, who stepped in and got it done. And I think a lot of us in our heart of hearts believe that if RG3 started that game, they would have walked out with a loss. And what he did was, it was clutch, to use the word of the week. It was clutch. And you wanted to see if he could keep it going. And instead, you know what? It's like I'm really sounding like King White Power here. It's like the Germans felt after losing World War I. You know how it was like they kind of had the war going somewhat in their direction. And then behind their back, the diplomats said, nah, we lost this war. We're going to sue for peace. You know, we're signing the peace treaties. That's it. Now we lost. I think a lot of people feel that's how Colt lost his job. He did everything right, and he performed as well as one could reasonably expect, and really better than RG3 had on the season, because RG3 had, what, 1.5 games? He lost the first one against the Texans and then was out against the Jags within a quarter, and they really felt like Colt did nothing to deserve losing his job. It was just taken from him.
I completely disagree with you. It was never his job in the first place. He was promoted to a position ahead of Kirk Cousins, who could not put a four-quarter game together. He never put together a single four-quarter game, it seems. So that is the problem that led to McCoy getting into this position where I just look at him on the field and I don't see someone who can play 16 games in the NFL.
You sure as shit don't see that in RG3.
I didn't say that either, but he is the kind of athletic talent that has a home run hitting capacity.
Yeah, and he's on the field, and that's been an issue.
So, I mean, you have three guys who can all play in Jay Gruden's system at the quarterback position in Washington. I think you got to go with the guy, though, who has, like, the greatest amount of upside. Because there's no question in my mind that it's RG3.
Again, I feel that people's problems with it, they feel Colt can be gone at a moment's notice. If Kirk's gone at a moment's notice, no one cares at this point. That's how much we love our quarterbacks. A couple bad games and you're dead to us.
Right.
But RG3, it really feels like that guy can suck balls all season. And given his closeness to Dan Snyder and the fact that they gave up, what, three first rounds and a second for the dude, like, he'll still be there. He'll still be there for a long time.
Assuming he's healthy.
This is an experiment that can go on forever. That's the really sad thing about it. It can go on for years given what they put into him.
But let me give you the problematic assessment I have of yesterday's game.
Okay.
Right now, you got Teddy Bridgewater at 1 and RG3 at 0. Because head-to-head, a rookie quarterback playing in college last year just beat the former NFC East divisional champ quarterback in RG3.
Well, I mean, let's not act like they're on the field together. I mean, he beat the defense.
But
he's having issues.
He outplayed RG3, and he has been playing for less than half a season.
You feel he played better than RG3?
He shouldn't be matching him blow for blow. I'll say that.
I'll agree with you. That would kind of go with my argument that I wish we had Colt out there.
Yes. Well,
I'm also going to say we. I'm going to do that horrible thing.
I'm not gonna say Colt should have been out there, but right now, Teddy Bridgewater is looking a lot more like the prospect I would want on my team than RG3 in
RG3
his current sorted state
looks
of health.
So broken. Did you not see him try to run on like one or two plays? He looked slow as shit. To quote Mobb Deep, he looked shook, son. That was a man afraid to take a tackle.
Oh, man. No, it's not good for your squad, man. So I want to take this moment. I hope I can remember to do this in the future, but I really want to continue to track how Teddy Bridgewater and RG3 progress from that game throughout the rest of the season.
Go for it. That
Bridgewater,
I will never do.
I really liked him coming out of college. I realized he wasn't as big as he could have been. He's a guy who really might have some injury problems in the NFL. He's not big enough. But at this moment, he is healthier than RG3. So let's see how the season proceeds for both those quarterbacks.
All right. Well, that's the crux of it. I really wanted to come on here and just crow about how the Skins turned their season around. And instead, the Indians bitched about him in Minnesota. Like, a lot of Indians were pissed and protesting the name. No, dude, because Mike Wise, the reporter for the Skins, who's kind of like, for the Post.
Yeah.
Who's kind of like making a reputation for himself just chronicling this name change drive.
Yeah.
Like, he found some Native Americans who came down from Canada, fully decked out in the Redskins gear, and they're like, yeah, we have no problem with it. And you could see on their face, it's like, and why do you, white guy? Why do you, dude?
Well, here's the reality, though. Like, we talk about this on the show regularly, but you do have it vary from tribe to tribe and individual to individual, whether it's offensive or not. The tribes that find it offensive and the individuals within those tribes who are particularly offended are sufficient to make this a term that needs to go away.
And that's what I feel. I hate that people would characterize, and I think it's much more offensive, because that's the power word of this century. Offensive. I'm offended. Well, yeah, I'm sorry. I hate it when someone's like, it's offensive to all Native Americans. And then a dude, guess what? He's not a Native American. He's just a guy in front of you. I like how you rob him of his humanity, though. And it's like, you should be offended. It's like,
let's be real. If the Raiders move back to L.A. and they change their name to NWA, how many brothers would give a high five? Be like, damn, yeah, I love that band. Of course Eazy-E should be remembered forever. You know what I mean? It's just like, that would offend a lot of people.
That would be amazing in a show of solidarity. All 53 men on the active roster contracted HIV. LA, NWA. No one's tackling them hard.
Straight out of Compton. That'd be great if they put the stadium in Compton. That'd be so good.
That'd be killer. That would be amazing. Instead of Gatorade, they just have AZT in cups. I would love that. Yeah, so I'm not saying that's the biggest story in the NFL, but a lot did happen to the Skins. The name got protested when they showed up in Minnesota for the game. Their bus got into a crash, which they tried to play down but a couple of the players who had been active suddenly were not off the active roster, but they weren't listed for game day with like whiplash and stuff like that.
Jeez.
But they didn't want to report that. It was kind of messed up, man. It was that's the team in a nutshell, from such a high to such a low.
Are you done blowing your load about the Redskins now? Can we talk about real football?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, what's your take on this Patriots-Broncos blowout?
It happens sometimes. I don't take away anything that much from any one game. If you do, you're the same anus that I think was at week 3. The Patriots were blown out by the Chiefs. And how many end of an era articles did you read for the rest of the week? Because it was a lot.
Well, have you seen any articles yet? I haven't been paying attention because I'm with you. Like, it's just one game at this point, but are we starting to see, like, everybody in the AFC should just, like, forget about it because the Patriots are just going to take it all? They're going to the Super Bowl? Like, Peyton should just, like, retire?
No. That is what's so annoying. It's like anyone who's paid attention to the NFL the last decade, it's a lot like the way Major League Baseball has played out in the last decade plus. It's so often won by the team that gets the hot hand near the end of the season. Like, the World Series this year was 2 wild card teams.
Was crazy, yeah.
That happens more often than not, man. Like, have the Giants ever come in as, like, a division winner and won? Have they not always limped in as a wild card?
No, I thought they won one as a division
winner. Okay. At least one other time they've taken the World Series as a wild card, I believe.
Yeah.
It happens in the NFL more often than not. What happened with Seattle last year, that's not the norm. The team that goes 13-3 and people put their money on wins it all.
It's a fair number, but it's not, like, more than half.
Look, what the Patriots are doing, it beats what the Redskins are doing. I'd rather my team be, what, 6-2 right now or some shit? I don't know the Patriots' record.
But, I mean, here's the real takeaway from this game. Let's not blow it out of proportion, but let's examine what happened in this game versus what happened last year in the AFC Championship.
Okay.
Because, you know, that was a blowout the other way. And yes, part of that was who's hosting. So that's a big deal. Who's going to end up with the number one seed in the AFC? I realize that Patriots have an upper hand on that, and it's tough to play in New England. That's obvious. Big thing to me, though, is Gronkowski actually played in this game. So no matter how much better the Broncos' defense is this year compared to last year, the Patriots' offense is infinitely better when Rob Gronkowski's on the field, because Tom Brady couldn't pass for Jack at the end of last year as soon as Gronk went down. That man is he's just a nightmare for defenses to cover, and he opens up the receivers on that squad. The second he's added there, good luck to anybody who's trying to pass the ball on the Patriots offense.
Yeah, and this is the whole point I'm trying to make, though, and why you simply cannot extrapolate a ton from any one game. Gronk gets injured next week. Bam. That's it. This is a dude with an injury history. I'm not saying he's Mr. Glass, but I sure as shit wouldn't want to build a franchise around him.
The Denver defense needs to go back and look at that and figure out a better way to handle him, because they couldn't cover anybody yesterday. There are defenses in this league, though, who have shut down Gronkowski this year.
Yeah, it happens. And again, he could be injured, and that could be it. Just as soon as the Patriots are building up ahead of steam, it could end for him.
I'm just saying, on his best day, there are linebackers in this league who are able to work within a defensive scheme to stop him. It happens. It is possible. He's not invincible.
Yeah. Okay, but I'm simply saying you can't watch this and walk away thinking that the Patriots are some unbeatable juggernaut. What, 5 weeks removed from them getting smashed? Is it in Arrowhead? Is it still Arrowhead? Is it not like Energizer Stadium now? Like, who bought the naming rights? God, I miss things having real names. The Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Ugh.
To me, the real shocker, though, out of the AFC West versus East matchups this weekend was Miami shutting out San Diego.
Oh, yeah. That was another team 3 weeks ago. Unbeatable. 5-1. 5-4 now. Shut out. First time since 99.
Couldn't even hold on to the ball. Phillip Rivers had an insane number of interceptions. It just, Miami is clearly a defensively driven team.
They're amazing defensively. Yeah. They are really good defensively. I've had a chance to watch them maybe 3 times this season.
Yeah.
They are really good defensively.
Ryan Tannehill is like on par with Trent Dilfer, though. I mean, you can't convince me at this point that he's a good quarterback. So that defense is going to have to carry him.
I don't know, 18-20 in the league. Like, he's not fucking horrible, but he's not great.
He's definitely, like, below 20.
Really?
Yeah.
Eh. trying to think who I'd liken him to. I can't come up with anything.
I'm going to, at the moment, put him in the Dilfer category. I still don't see them as a wild card, but they've fought their way back into the conversation.
They already have a week one win over the Patriots, man. So it's...
Well, yeah, I mean, that helps them on their divisional record.
Yeah, so if they can claw even with them...
I don't think they're going to claw even with them. I mean, it would be nice if they could actually beat them in their matchup.
I mean, they were like seconds away from beating the Packers a couple weeks ago. And that game is the difference. Well, like, you know, any one game can be the difference in the record. Because they're what, one game removed from the Patriots record?
That's a big tiebreaker for them to have over San Diego. Because that was, you know, two teams that I really thought San Diego was going to have a pretty solid lock on the wild card. And now that they have a loss to Miami, it's suddenly looking like an AFC East team might sneak into the picture.
Yeah. It could be Miami. Let's not say any AFC's team. I guess Buffalo's not doing horribly.
Doing bad. I mean, KC's got a pretty good record.
Were they on
suddenly.
Bye last week or this week?
I think so.
I don't remember them playing. They're at what, 4-3 or something? Yeah, and the Dolphins just have a.
They're
a
5-3. Yeah.
Oh, they're 5-3. Buffalo.
Yeah.
Okay. So Dolphins are tied with them.
It's really just the Jets who are dropping a deuce. So we don't need to really discuss the. I'm going to still say it, though. I think the Jets can beat the Patriots when they play in a few weeks. So I'm just going to put it out there. Like,
oh, God.
There's no way that they're going to be able to run the wall against the Jets. So it's just a matter of, can the Jets even score?
You say so much semi-intelligent shit, and then that comes out of your mouth.
But, dude, why do they even play the game if NFL teams can't beat one another? Like, it's almost never a pure lock somebody's going to win.
Well, you know what? Raiders at Seattle this week. I felt fairly safe picking that.
And yet, that was a pretty close game, man.
Not even a touchdown separating. You're right, but the ultimate outcome, I think, is still fairly easy to pick.
I bet the spread was bigger than 6 points, I'll say that.
Probably was like 8.5 or something like that. I think I actually remember that.
But the big story of the AFC to me is Baltimore-Pittsburgh. I mean, that game really has put the AFC North into a position where you have three teams all vying for that wild card spot right behind Cincinnati.
What are the records right now in the North?
It's everybody's 5-3, and then Cincinnati's 5-2-1, I believe. So.
Are you kidding me?
No, man, it's intense. The AFC North is intense. I'm sorry, Pittsburgh is 6-3.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I thought Pittsburgh got their sixth win with that.
And then Baltimore's 5-4, so they're technically in fourth in the division.
God, that's nuts.
That's a great division right now. That's a great division.
It is a clusterfuck. All of a sudden, you're down with exciting football. Early on, you're like, I want to see good football, and you were defining that as, like, powerful, but now you're defining it as exciting and messy is good football, and that's what I agree with. This is an interesting division, therefore, it's good. It's not power level good. I mean... Was it? Roethlisberger is the first dude to ever throw 12 touchdowns in 2 weeks. I think that was like the weird stat of the week.
They gotta win.
They come up with every jack-off stat they can nowadays, so there you go. My brain pollution passed on to you through a microphone.
I'm still not impressed, man. Like, I want to see them actually beat somebody on the road. Like, can they beat a decent team on the road?
They're another team, 100%, that people are jacking it to furiously right now, and I'm with you. They're two losses from looking like dog shit again.
So, yeah, they're playing at New York this week. Let's see how they handle that. That's not a good team they're playing. Are they going to throw six more touchdowns? We'll see. The next couple weeks, apparently they're just going to blow everybody out with, like, six touchdowns. But I want to see them December 7th play at Cincinnati because that is a legitimate playoff contender ahead of them in the division. Can they actually beat Cincinnati on the road? I don't see it.
Well... You're focusing on the AFC. I thought the stories of the week were coming out of the NFC, specifically the NFC West, the Cards' first team to 7 wins, and I believe the only team with only one loss. Bruce Arians looking amazing.
On the flip side, San Francisco looking like dog shit.
San Francisco looking like they are not going to make the postseason, and it's really interesting because they were a team that even when they had everything going right the past year, maybe even 2 years ago, there were whispers that it's Jim in San Fran, right?
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh had worn out his welcome and was clashing hard with the GM, and they wanted him gone. And people were like, are you fucking kidding me? This guy, I think, what, all 4 years he's been there, they've made at least the NFC Championship?
Yeah.
Or something ridiculous like that? Anyone in the league would put up with his bullshit for that kind of result. Well, guess what? If that's the case, if that really was the vibe there, the instant they fall short of the playoffs, his ass is gone, man.
I think he's leaving at the end of the season no matter what. That Michigan job is opening up, and I just think, like, San Francisco, as many playoff games as that roster's put in the last three seasons, these guys are going to be tired come December. I mean, I just don't see how they can make it all the way to the Super Bowl this year again. It's tough. It's tough when you play in three championship games in a row.
Well, I think Frank Gore's finally shown his age, and yeah, you...
Ooh, man.
You've tagged an extra 3 to 4 games onto that man's schedule every year.
I believe in Frank, man. Come on, step off.
Dude, he's a running back in the NFL. I don't know what to tell you.
He's not a Hall of Famer. I think he's a Hall of Famer, man. I really do. And so I think he's got it in him this season. But
That may be true, but I wouldn't want Jim Brown running for me right now. Shit ages, man. Not like wine. Yeah, man. The Rams game, they were the ones that stopped San Francisco at the last minute. The highlight of the game to me was... Jeff Fisher, the coach of the Rams. There was a non-reviewable play that didn't go, I don't know the specifics, but it just didn't go the Rams' way. And he's on the rules committee, so this dude knows his shit. He takes out his red challenge flag, throws it, knowing he can't challenge it, but also aware of the fact that a referee has to come over to the flag and talk to him, and uses the flag just to be able to cuss out the referee.
And it didn't cost him a timeout?
No, because it wasn't challengeable.
Wow.
So he just throws it and is like, you fucking cunt, come here and get an earful.
Wow.
And hand me my flag while you're at it.
Wow, that rule needs to be fixed, but that is impressive.
Oh, man. I am so sick of them miking up players. I want them miking up coaches. That's the shit I want to hear. Other than that, the NFC East got a lot more interesting, if you ask me, as well. The Cowboys dropped their second straight.
Romo's had to sit. I mean, he wasn't able to play this week, so it gave Philly a chance to remain in first place by themselves.
Yeah, Romo's injury is really gross. It's his his transverse process. He has two of those broken. Mm. And if you've ever seen like a skeleton hanging in a doctor's office or even on a fucking poster in, you know, some kid's dorm room, because, you know, we're all into metal circa 85. Apparently, it's imaginary dorm. The transverse process are those little wings that come off the vertebrae.
Oh, geez.
And those are just, like, snapped off and, like, floating in his back. I'm like, how the fuck is this guy? What horse pills are they giving to him?
Does
rectally,
of course. Does
he need
surgery for that?
No, apparently you just chill out and let it heal. But he's, like, out 1 week. And then he's like, fuck it. I'm fit for the field.
No, we'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, exactly. The guy doesn't heal like Wolverine. I'm not a doctor, but I would think dinky little tabs on your spine, you probably want more than 1 week to let those heal.
I mean, right now they're still in a position to get a wild card spot, so I think it's hard to rush
them
back.
They're still in position to win the division, man, because the Eagles also got bit hard by the injury bug. They managed to win. I think they beat, what, the Houstons?
The Houstons!
The Houston Texans. Let's not act like Texans isn't a stupid name. So they beat the Houston Texans this week, but they lost Nick Foles, I think, for like a month at minimum. They had Mark Sanchez come in.
I think, baby.
Yeah, he throws a 52-yarder, his first pass, and then like two plays later throws a pick. I mean, it was Sanchez all over. And they lose. Are they 4-3 or 3-4, the Eagles?
I think they're 4-3.
Okay, so then they lose their middle linebacker, D'Amico Ryans, however the fuck you pronounce that. I love how someone would get on my ass for mispronouncing that. D'Amico isn't a real name. I wouldn't name my fucking gerbil D'Amico, okay? And he's a human being. I don't know what to tell you. He's D'Amico. He's D'Amico. I don't give a shit. He's D'Amesso. I'll go with a soft C. It doesn't matter. It's a make-believe name. He's out for the year. So their defense is going to suffer at least somewhat, and Sanchez is starting for him. So have fun with that, guys.
Well, with Detroit off this week, to me, the most interesting other story of the NFC was New Orleans quietly took over first place in the NFC South. I think this is the first time they've held that position now. Carolina's been just clinging barely onto that all season, but with an ugly, ugly Thursday night game. I'm not blaming that on Thursday night football. I'm blaming that on Cam Newton just not playing well. He really showed me that if I were the owner of the Carolina Panthers, I would just start over. Like, I got to be honest. Like, I'm still in that position right now. I like Cam Newton in college, and I still think that he's a guy that can start in the NFL. But you got to be kidding me if he thinks he deserves a max contract next season. He doesn't deserve one. If I own the Panthers, I'd just tell him at the end of this year, based on what I've seen so far.
You don't think he's, like, injured? I mean, he really had a injury that was, I think, more severe than they let on.
And that's definitely part of it.
It's carried into the season.
It's he's got to be able to throw the ball, though, man. It's just hard for me to say that he deserves max money when he doesn't really have the track record leading them into the playoffs with success. I mean, it's got to be a whole package.
How deep,
and right now,
how deep did they go last year?
They just they got a bye and then they lost.
Ugh.
They lost their home game, man. Ugh. So it's just they had a great regular season and then just a massive disappointment. And now they're on track not to make the playoffs. So I think you have to let him hit free agency, test the waters, because I don't think he's worth the kind of money that Dalton just got paid. I don't think he's worth that kind of cash. I mean, you might be able to give him a contract.
I think that's unfair, though. If I had to pick one in a vacuum, I think he'd pick Cam Newton, man. But Dalton just has a much stronger team.
I wouldn't pay either of those guys that money. I guess that's my problem. Like, I just have a hard time paying quarterbacks without proof of success that much money.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Romo's contract to me was a little questionable. I think to some degree he's redeemed himself this year, but now he's injured, you know? So I have a problem with guys getting that kind of money. I even have a problem, I mean, you know me, I have a problem with Eli and Big Ben getting that kind of money. I think they're guys that really haven't justified making as much as they do this season.
They haven't. The problem is that if they try to have, like, you know, if the team tried to bargain a cheaper contract with these dudes, some desperate team would step in and just be like, here's your $20 million a year, dude. And that'd be it. That would be it. If they tried to be like, hey, Big Ben, you're realistically worth $12 million a year.
I mean, I'm just like, with $20 million, you wouldn't have to bring James Harrison back to play in your defense. Like, that's so much money. That's so many other players that can make such a huge contribution to your team. To put all that money on a quarterback who is not consistent enough, it baffles me. I'm impressed that Big Ben has been able to drop 6 touchdowns consecutive weeks. All right? That's a very impressive accomplishment. He looked like a dog turd before that.
All right, folks, this is the Fan in Focus segment. We had kind of dropped this the last couple of weeks, but I have a special guest this week that I'm been a friend of his on Twitter for a long time. That's a running trend you're going to notice on this show. A lot of people that I know via Twitter, because I don't have real world friends, I just friend people and hope they friend me back. This is Derek Montilla. Derek, are you there?
I'm here, sir. Thank you for the great introduction. I feel the same way. I don't make real-world friends anymore, just Twitter friends.
No, and you are much more important than most of my real-world friends because you have a lot of followers.
Yeah, I have no idea why. Yeah. I have no idea why people want to follow me, but it's awesome. It's awesome that they do, and I've made some crazy, like, real-world friends from Twitter, so that's kind of been the most interesting part about it.
That is amazing. The best I've ever done off Twitter is I've gotten some girls to show me their tits.
But, hey.
Yeah. Let's not play
now,
that
though.
Down. Yeah.
Let's not downplay that. That's important. That's not something that's going to happen every day without it.
You have 50,000 followers. I've seen some nipples, tomato, tomato. Derek, before we get into talking about the Cards, because you are based out of Arizona, can you just tell the people at home what it is you do as a day job? Because I find it interesting. I have a radio background. I know you actually do radio as well. So can you tell them what it is, your main gig?
I do. We have the Cave Show. It's a sports radio show here in Phoenix, Arizona, on NBC Sports AM 1060. And we just kind of kick around the topics for the week. We also have a website, thesportscave.com, that I write for. Typically, I write Diamondbacks, Major League Baseball stuff. I cover the Diamondbacks regular season, and I did get a chance to go out and cover the Cardinals during the preseason and their training camp. It's been an absolute blast to watch this team this season, and especially, you know, for this city that hasn't had a lot to cheer about with the other franchises so far over the last year.
You mean Los Suns?
Los Suns. Los Coyotes,
D-backs,
you know, the worst record in baseball. So it's nice to have something to brighten the sports attitude in the city.
I'm not a huge baseball guy, and this isn't a baseball show, but I do know enough to know that, like, a couple of years ago, it almost seemed like the Diamondbacks were ahead of the curve. Like, they were building this young team that was going to become something, and then they were in the playoffs maybe a year early. So I don't know what the hell happened.
Kevin Towers happened is what happened. But yeah, no, it definitely, they changed a lot of components, especially when they were successful. And, you know, you scratch your head at that when teams do that. They almost seem to get impatient, and they almost seem to like, ooh, we got this great idea and we're going to build a winner. And then none of their great ideas really panned out.
It's cruel when it works that way. It's kind of the same thing has happened with the Caps. And again, we'll get to football in like 1 second, but the Caps locally, it seemed like Ted Leonsis built this thing organically, and with Ovechkin, it was just a matter of time until they finally got the cup, and it has never worked out, and it never will. And that is DC sports in a nutshell. But I want to talk.
Hey, you have Kevin Durant coming, so you have that to look forward to.
Yeah, it's great. He tweets pictures of himself in Redskins gear, and that's what the Redskins can brag about. We have a loser on the field, but Kevin Durant likes us. It's very awesome like that.
Hey, well, do what you got to do, you know?
I want to talk to you about the Cards, though. I feel, at least this week, yeah, you can point to the Patriots and what they accomplished against the Broncos Sunday afternoon. But in a lot of circles, I think the more hardcore football circles, really the story of this week is the Cards. I believe they are the first team in the league to 7 wins. They're also the only team that has 1 loss. Going into the season, really, the focus in the West, obviously, was on the Seahawks, and it was on the 49ers as well. They were kind of the two rivals, and I believe the Cards lost their bid for the postseason the final week of the year, or the final week of the season last year. I could be wrong on that. But going into this season, did you really, like, was there something that you guys understood locally that wasn't known nationally? Because I do feel a lot of teams kind of suffer and they don't get the attention they deserve on a national stage until they're huge winners. Like locally in Arizona, were you guys like, fuck it, these dudes are running away with the West and we know it, or what?
No, I don't think so. I would love to say I saw this coming, but we really didn't. In all honesty, I think people saw them kind of taking a step backwards because they had a lot of young guys that they were coming over. Mm-hmm. They lost Carlos Dansby to the Cleveland Browns, and he was such a huge part of this defense. And, you know, they were having a young guy, Kevin Minter, step up into his place. They also lost Darrell Washington due to injury, or due to the suspension, not injury. And you know, those were key parts of this defense. And like I was saying about Kevin Minter, he stepped up into kind of a veteran role of that interior linebacker position that's really responsible for a lot on defense and has just done a tremendous job. I have to say hats off to Bruce Arians and Steve Kimes, you know, the GM and the coach, for what they've done here. They've really done a tremendous job bringing in young talent that, you know, wasn't a lot of big names, wasn't a lot of things that were going to get a lot of attention on draft day, but a lot of guys have worked out, specifically wide receiver, you know, John Brown, and what he's been able to do receiving and offensively. It's been amazing. And he is one guy that we saw during training camp that blew us away, and we were really impressed with what he did. You know, a lot of times that doesn't really pan out during the regular season, mm-hmm. but luckily for the Cardinals, he's been exactly what we thought he could be when we were seeing him in preseason.
It's funny you mentioned guys that don't really have big names. One of the few, I feel he's a little old, but he still has a big name. Carson Palmer, how do you feel about him, and especially in town, but you specifically as a sports radio dude, how do you feel about him at quarterback? Because I think a lot of people think that his best days might be behind him, and even looking at his play now, you're not going to say it's lights out. He can throw a decent deep ball, but, I mean, is the opinion in the city that he's actually one of the weaker links on the field for the team, or what?
No, actually, you know, I think because they lost that Broncos game when we didn't have him in there, and mm-hmm. Drew Stanton did come in for a couple of games. I think the plan originally was to have Drew Stanton come in and become a starting quarterback, and then Carson Palmer became available, and that plan went out the window. Drew Stanton went back to a backup position. He's a very capable quarterback, and I think if anything does happen with Carson Palmer, it's nice to have a solidified backup that you are confident in that can come in and still do good things with this team, not just, you know, hopefully sustain a lead, but it could actually lead the team to victory in Carson's absence. But Carson was great with the Raiders. He didn't get a lot of attention because they didn't win and they didn't score a whole bunch, but he had a ton of yards with them, and that was a team that kind of obviously flew under the radar due to their lack of success and being shitty overall. But The feeling here was bringing in Carson Palmer was kind of like when they brought in Kurt Warner. And, you know, I think that was the hopeful side of Arizona, because we just felt it was the same kind of story. You know, a veteran quarterback that's done tremendous things throughout his career. Obviously, Kurt Warner had already won a Super Bowl with St. Louis. But Carson Palmer, it just felt like he never really was on a good enough team to get there. He was close on some teams, and even that Bengals team he was on could have been something had he stuck around. You know, but
had his knee not exploded.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and I understand, too, you know, his position on things, taking a step away from football and such and coming back. You know, it's nice to see him have the success that he's had here. I think that, you know, the thing about the Bruce Arians offense and the way that they run this team is it's been impressive on their lack of turnovers and their ability to just be disciplined both defensively and offensively. I mean, Carson Palmer has just made better decisions this year than he was last year. Last year, you just saw him throwing the ball away and kind of getting rattled easily. And just, I mean, I don't know. There was a lot of roboticness to him. He was like, you could tell if a wide receiver got bumped off a route, he was still thrown to where he should have been, regardless of the fact that the wide receiver could be just completely wide open in a different spot. You know, and certain things like that he didn't have the ability to ad lib during a live play kind of kept him from being, I think, throughout his career, a tremendous quarterback and having that acclaim as being one of the top quarterbacks. But he's capable and he has the talent.
Okay, so you're crediting the coaching then with being able to cut down on the turnovers, and not that they're just on a hot streak, because I think that can happen in the league sometimes where teams will just go maybe a stretch of four or five games where their turnover differential is like nuts in their favor and they rattle off like 4-1, and then all of a sudden it comes back down to earth and they go like 3-3 for the next six. So you actually think Bruce Arians is like completely to credit for him not throwing as many picks?
I might give him way too much credit. I might just be giving this guy, like, you know, crowning him as the genius without, you know, being, well, having a lot of information to back it up. But you just look at what he's done. And like I said, it's the way that the whole team plays. It's not just offensively. You know, there's a big lack of turnovers on the offensive side of the ball. But even defensively, you know, when they make there was a couple of plays, like when we were playing Washington, where they just kind of gave up really big plays unnecessarily. And they were able to kind of make adjustments and, you know, they've had those kind of occasions, but they don't really compound mistakes with other mistakes on top of mistakes. And defensively, they don't really rack up a lot of penalties. And that once again kind of shows the discipline that the team has as a whole.
I am so jealous of that. What is it like to just not give away games on penalty yards?
I have no idea. I mean, this is fucking new to me. This is new to me because, in all honesty, I mean, it's something that we've always seen the Cardinals team do. You know, they've always kind of been the ragtag, come from behind team, or, you know, the underdog. And you know, even the year that we went on the Super Bowl run, I distinctly remember it just kind of being a series of shocks and surprises as we went through it. This team has a different feel, and I don't know if it's just the way that they played throughout the season up to this point. But there's a lot of confidence, I think, with the fans with this team and within, you know, the organization. They seem like they feel they can win and they can do something amazing, which is potentially, I mean, be the first team in history to have home field advantage in the Super Bowl, which would just be an absolutely incredible and mind blowing thing. Because when people throw stuff things like that around, you kind of laugh it off. Sure, they're going to make it to the Super Bowl, you know, the year that the Super Bowl's here. But with the play they've had and the performance they've had, it feels like they want this. They want to be the first team to play in a home field in the Super Bowl, and they're not settling for just the division. They have their, you know, sights set beyond that. They're just a very, I don't know, man, well-coached team. That's why I give so much credit to Bruce Arians.
I can sense how erect you are through the phone talking about a home team Super Bowl scenario this year.
Oh my God. Go look up that picture of Randy on the episode of South Park when he jizzed all over himself, and that's me right now. But, you know, it's kind of a fantasy right now. It's still, you know, I still am realistic about a lot of things. I kind of agree with you. I do see them coming back down to earth in the second half. They had a great win against a Cowboys team that obviously was without, you know, Tony Romo. So no matter what happened in that game, the Dallas Cowboys were going to have an excuse. Either we were going to see an injured and not 100% Tony Romo play, or we were playing against the backup. And either way, the Cardinals were going to somehow come out of that if they won without getting, you know, the respect they deserve for beating the team that many claim to be the best team in the NFL. So I think that they that kind of lack of respect continues to push them, and I think they'll continue to do good things based on that.
No, it's funny. I hope you guys continue with the underdog mentality. For whatever reason, I really do enjoy the Cards. I guess maybe because they were like the doormat of the East for so long. I've always felt bad for them. But like on a national stage, I really feel you guys are almost being perceived as the Seattle of this year. Like strong defense, a coach that seems like he's a step or two ahead of everyone else. So yeah, I mean you're underdogs for now, but I dude, one Super Bowl, that entire perception throughout the whole league could change.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the wide receivers on this team are really hard to cover. So someone like John Brown comes in as the third wide receiver behind, you know, Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd, and he can actually catch, and he's fast, and he can, you know, run routes well, yet even as a rookie, it puts a lot of pressure on defenses because it becomes hard to cover that many receivers that are capable. So many guys are able to do one thing or the other well, but they really aren't multifaceted like the three receivers the Cardinals have.
This is a bit of a throwaway question. I have a couple like goof questions for the end. I know that a lot of established divisions that kind of have more of a history, the rivalries are there, like Skins, Cowboys, and actually this flies in the face of what I said 5 seconds ago, so I'm a damn idiot. But the AFC North, you've got the Ravens really just can't fucking stand the Steelers. In the West, do you just focus on, like, I hate the Seahawks because they got that ring last year? Or is there, like, someone established that the Cards cannot stand? Like, how does it work out there?
I would say because of the longstanding NFC East days, there's still that hatred for the Dallas Cowboys.
You're a good man. Continue.
That seems to be a good established rivalry. But, yeah, now that the NFC West is kind of heated up, I feel like it actually, you know, believe it or not, it's more with the 49ers.
Okay.
The 49ers have had a long amount of sustained success, and they just their fans tend to come, you know, in the visiting territories
and murder people in the stadium.
Oh my God! Strike up. That's exactly it. Just murder people. I mean, I saw some of the worst fight videos. I looked up one because there was a fight here between the 49ers and the Cardinals, and it was amazing how the plethora of YouTube videos you could find on 49ers fighting fans, fighting people at different venues and places across the country. It was a nationwide world tour of assholes getting drunk and starting shit with people in their home stadium. So, you know, I think it's the 49ers, at least within the NFC West. The Seahawks, I think a lot of people respect what they did and kind of respect the team. Their team and their fans aren't as disrespectful, you know, and that kind of goes in other sports too. You know, it's not necessarily the most successful team, but it's the fan base. So, like with the Diamondbacks, it's the Dodgers because they're just terrible.
I feel when the 49ers come to town, World Star Hip Hop sends out camera crews. They're like, this is not a drill. We do not want to miss a minute, people.
That makes sense. That makes so much sense because they have so many angles of the fight.
Yeah. I guess the last thing, again, talking about NFC West teams, the balls the last few weeks on Jeff Fisher, like even though they're in the division are and Bruce Arians, I wouldn't trade him for anyone if I were you right now. Do you look at like the game he called against Seattle? And then I don't know if this got a lot of press. Maybe it did for you guys out there. But apparently against San Francisco yesterday, there was some sort of blown call by the officials that was non-reviewable. He apparently threw a challenge flag just because it would demand that the official come over to him and then cuss him out. And only threw the flag for that reason. Like, do you have a man crush on him the way I do, or what?
I love that. No, I absolutely love that. Because Jeff Fisher's been around so long and he's seen so much that he's in that position. And, I mean, I don't know. I think that some of the rules and some of the calls in the NFL are ridiculous. I think some of the rules that are non-reviewable are completely ridiculous. But, you know, with time, I'm sure that'll change. It's just nice to see someone, you know, start shit over it. You know, it's nice to see someone just not want to take it and just want to give a referee a piece of his mind. I love that about sports, and I feel like sports are becoming more civilized, so we're losing our great, like, meltdowns that athletes used to have. You'll notice that a lot of them just come from minor league sports now. That's where you'll see, like, somebody just losing their shit.
Yeah.
But, you know, the professional sports level, everybody's got to keep it cool. It's kind of like, I don't know if you saw that Michael Jordan interview with Ahmad Rashad where he was talking about playing golf with the president, and he basically talked shit about the president having no golf game.
No, and I didn't see that.
He even said, I'm not saying anything about him as a politician. I'm just saying he's a shitty golfer. And that shit's hilarious because of the fact that, you know, we never saw that Michael Jordan, and it would have been great to see that Michael Jordan, the one that just talked trash about everybody instead of being all professional all the time.
Oh, he's apparently kind of hard. Have you ever watched the YouTube video? I think it's Chameleonaire.
Oh, yeah.
Tells it, goddamn, that's so good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's the great thing about that. We'll never see that kind of persona anymore in professional sports. We didn't even see that from him when he was in sports. Because you have to keep this very clean, very professional image. And, you know, I think it's lost that sports are still entertainment. You know, it's just entertainment with betting on it.
Basketball was so clean back then. It was like, you know, a decade before Iverson. just this guy alleging Michael Jordan dropping N-bombs. I'm like, excuse me, sir? This happened? Oh, my God. It was, I don't know, man. It was like hearing your parents curse for the first time.
My God. I love that interview when I heard, like, you know, who's going to call the president of the United States a shitty golfer, man? Like, yeah.
Yeah, and you know Jordan could get away with it. He's one of the few people.
He was talking trash to that golfer the other day, talking about him wearing, he's like, I'm not wearing your shoes. You're wearing Air Jordans, you know? I love that side of him. And, you know, like I said, I think it's just new because we didn't ever get to see that. And, you know, someone like Jeff Fisher gets to a point where he doesn't really care anymore. And he's starting to just do whatever he wants in order to get get what he wants to say or do in. And I love that. It's great in sports. We miss it. We don't have it enough.
Yeah, I hate that it would come at the expense of the Cards. But really, I do feel for that guy, like what he's been able to achieve with Bradford pretty much riding pine for 2 years now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, their defense is amazing, and they've done a lot of great things with that team. It's almost time to move on from Bradford because that guy doesn't seem like he's ever going to be right or ever going to be the talent that everybody thought he was going to be. But defensively, they're a monster, and they're taking care of things when it comes to playing big teams within the division.
That whole situation with Bradford is maddening. That guy, the contract he has signed, don't you think that forces them to move on? Like just 100%, they're like, we can't justify this, and if we keep you around, it'll be at like 50%, and you'll hate us.
Right. You'll never be happy here. And I don't know. I mean, I think some athletes are a little realistic about it. I just don't know if he is or not. And you know, you comes to a point where you realize you haven't fulfilled the potential that even you thought you would. You know, you got to still push hard. You got to still try hard, but. I don't know. I would definitely see them moving on, and you know, I feel like the longer that they wait, the longer it's going to take for them to be significant of any kind. You know, it's a tough defensive division, and if you don't have a good offense, you're not going to be able to, you know, break out of it. You might win some close games, but you're not going to break out of it.
Yeah, Derek, man, you are friggin' awesome. See, I said friggin' because we're radio professionals here. That's our F-bomb. If both of my listeners want to follow you on Twitter, what is your handle, and can you give all the URLs and all that jazz again?
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at @cap_caveman with a K. Don't be scared. I am on there all the time. So if at 3 o'clock in the morning you send me a tweet and I reply in 20 seconds.
You are the only guy who tweets that much that I haven't muted. So that is testament to how good he is.
I try not to be like awful about it, but you know. You can also read my writing and the other guys from my site on thesportscave.com. And we are available to listen to online with our radio show at kdus.com, Saturdays at 3 p.m. Arizona time. I'm not good with daylight saving time, so you'll figure it out.
So during
Arizona doesn't change.
Please tell me that during the off months of the season, you write fan fiction about the Diamondbacks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really should because I really have nothing better to do. At least they cleaned house and there's like that hope again. You know, there's hope, GM, new manager, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we'll see what they can do. It's going to be an uphill battle. And with the World Series champs in your division and the Dodgers that want to spend, you know, billions of dollars, it's going to be a tough ride for this Diamondbacks team.
All right. Derek, thanks again, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay, we're now returning to the rest of the episode, which was recorded with Howard. The Derek interview I did separately and plunked it into the middle. That is why you didn't hear Howard. He called it a day, but you're going to hear those dulcet half-Korean tones coming out of his face hole right now.
All right, man. So upcoming, we got week 10.
Yes. Yes, we do.
And so I'm hitting the button on my iPad to take me to that webpage.
Oh, no. I'm already on it. The Thursday night game you mentioned previously, it's Browns-Bengals.
Surprisingly worth watching.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'll give the Browns this much. They're not out. They are not out at this point.
Well, they could put themselves back in it with a victory over Cincinnati, man. So that's a game worth watching, period.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I disliked watching that Carolina game against New Orleans.
I'm so happy you mentioned that. The Thursday night games have left CBS. The production on NFL Network is so bad. It's so goddamn bad, dude. It's like going from watching an episode of like Parks and Rec to watching Pawn Stars. Like,
yeah.
It's just, it feels so ghetto and dirty and upper tier cable. It is just not good. I hated it. That Carolina Saints game was so bad. Not just for what was going on the field. I hated the production. I know I'm going to hate the production behind the Browns-Bengals thing. Like, they need to just suck it up and give the games to CBS. They are not, the NFL Network cannot handle it. I think there's actually a decent slate of games coming. Dolphins at Lions, two teams that I don't know if anyone would have picked them to be at 5-3 and 6-2 this year. That's a fascinating game.
It's not going to tell us a whole lot on the season, though.
No,
I really
but
don't
like strong
think
teams squaring off at this point in the season, always watchable.
I guess, yeah. I wouldn't turn that off if it were on.
No, just
I'm
by
not
virtue of their records.
It, I'm really not looking for it.
Cowboys at Jaguars. The only thing somewhat interesting about this, the storyline, will Romo play, and it's in London. I'm upset that it isn't like 9:30 a.m. game. And it's just going to be another 1 p.m. game. I might get it, actually, in my market. I don't really know. The Skins have a bye, and I'm in D.C. I don't know if that's going to be like the national game or if it's going to be Dolphins-Lions. I think Dolphins-Lions would be on CBS anyhow.
Yeah, I'm much more interested in watching San Francisco at New Orleans. I think, for me, I want to see if the Niners can bounce back against a team from that's from the weakest division in the NFC. So I really want to see how these two teams match up. It's a good time to be a Saints fan, and right now it's a time of desperation for the 49ers, so I think that could turn out to be a really good game.
I guess. I don't know. I don't have a feeling for that game. Those are both teams that are just underachieving as far as I'm concerned this year. Like, I didn't expect a ton from the Saints, so maybe underachieving is the right word for them, but the 49ers are just...
It's really hard at the 1 o'clock to really find a lot of stuff to watch this week. Upcoming.
No, Dolphins Lions I think is fascinating.
Yeah,
I think
check
the most
that out.
Watchable.
Dallas Jacksonville. Even if Romo plays, I'm not that interested.
And Chiefs Bills. Again, you're talking 2-5-3s. If I'm going with
get
okay records.
Out of here. Come on, man. Come
I'm
on.
It's watchable. I'm saying it's watchable.
Kyle
man.
Orton versus Alex Smith. No.
It's watchable.
No.
It's watchable. I'll just keep repeating it. You can't refute it. You can say no all you want, and then I just say, it's watchable.
It's not 4 o'clock. Get me out of here, man.
All right, well, Broncos-Raiders, that's divisional, but I don't really give a shit about that. But the Raiders, Derek Carr is looking decent. Like, he was an okay pick. And then who is their, like, insane linebackers? Is it Khalil Mack or some shit?
Yeah, I would look at that game more as one of those ones if the Raiders can somehow beat the Spurs.
Yeah, if they win, it's fucking insanity. If they lose, it is what it is. Rams-Cardinals, to me, is the winner at 4.
Do you think the Rams can beat the Cards?
Yeah, I do. I don't think it's going to happen, but the Rams have had, like, have they not won 2 in a row? Am I wrong on this?
I think we have to lead with Jeff Fisher if he's able to pull off this upset.
Oh, if Jeff Fisher wins, yeah. Like, that dude needs his mustache bronze. No, he was it 2 weeks ago that they upset Seattle?
It was 2-3 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I think they're coming off 2 divisional wins. So, dude, if a couple weeks ago you were picking them to beat Seattle, you would have sounded fucking insane. If you picked them last week to beat the 49ers, you would have sounded mental. So does it sound strange to say, hey, they're going to beat the Cards? Fuck yeah, the Cards are 7-1. But they're equipped to do it.
From the flip perspective.
I wouldn't lay bucks on it. They're equipped, though.
From the flip side, if Arizona can win this game, that gives them a huge leg up on Seattle and San Francisco because they're the one that's beat St. Louis.
If they win, that's their division, barring some crazy shit. And really, what can happen to them? They've already been without Carson Palmer for multiple games.
They've showed some grit this year. I'm very impressed with that
squad. We'll get up to the Rams. They've been without what's his shit?
Missed you know, it. He's never Sam Bradford is yet to prove that he is capable of being an elite quarterback in the NFL. So it sucks because
there's
no way
he's there after that season. There's no way.
I mean, they in a way
he's been gone two seasons. Am I wrong on this?
I'll put it this way. I mean, I feel like the Rams organization gave up a lot when they committed to him instead of drafting RG3. I really do think that had they drafted RG3, they would have been in a much better spot. Now, I know you're not the biggest RG3 fan. However, Sam Bradford
that
was
might
the
have been
last.
A better place for him. Like, D.C. is the most toxic place, one of the most toxic markets, at least when it comes to football.
Yeah.
And RG3 is a fragile dude. Ego-wise, he just is. You cannot argue otherwise.
Yeah.
This is not a good place for him. Like, in St. Louis, man, yeah, he could have been something. Especially what? If they go to L.A. after this year, he would have been great out there.
I really think St. Louis should have offered they should have offered Sam Bradford to the Redskins. I mean, that really should have just been the trade.
Well,
like,
Shanahan always loved him. Shanahan was high as hell on Bradford. They would have gone for it.
It's just that contract that Bradford signed. He was the last of the first-round draft picks.
Yeah.
To get when he signed his contract, he would have been paid more annually than Peyton Manning.
Yeah, he came out what, it was like 5 years, $60 million or something like that, or was it more than that?
It was more than that.
Okay, geez.
Yeah, it was
so insane.
The Colts.
So insane.
The Colts at that time had to restructure Peyton's contract to make him receive more money per year.
Or a kid who hasn't taken a snap in the NFL.
So that was the problem that led to the restructured rookie contracts. And
yeah, because the dude will never accept you going down. He will never accept you've played decently. Your contract is fucking untenable. We're going to only knock you down 20%. He's going to be like, peace and fuck you.
He's going to have a tough time getting a job basically anywhere. I almost wonder if St. Louis is even going to give him much of a shot.
He's going to not play in St. Louis, and he's not going to get anything close to his current contract, and it's going to be a very interesting storyline next year.
Yeah. I think he might stay in St. Louis. We'll see.
I do not think he will be willing to eat the shit sandwich that they prepare for him.
I mean, he's taking those people's money. He's just taking the season ticket holders' money and produced nothing. I feel like he owes it to the city of St. Louis. I really do. Like, he should take less money and just actually try to play well for a change.
Well, he does. The same way RG3 owes this city the draft picks.
Whatever, man.
Like, you
get
look
out of here.
At the fucking draft picks that went into him. It's like,
that was a raw.
Do you not understand how good you should be? Do I need to draw you a chart?
I think that's completely unfair to RG3. But
no, that's absolutely fair.
All right, man. Anything else? To me, like the other
Bears,
4 o'clock game.
Nah, just Bears at Packers Sunday night.
You don't want to see the Giants play the Seahawks.
I don't give a shit as long as Seahawks lose.
I'd watch that game. I'd probably watch that over the other two. But
no,
yeah,
Rams at Cards. That's
Crown Jewel primetime. Yeah. Let's look at Bears versus Packers.
And then Panthers at Eagles Monday night. The only thing interesting about that is to see if Sanchez as a starter and the Eagles without their starting middle linebacker can hold it together.
I think we're going to skip Monday Night Football next week, man. I'm not
probably
interested in that game.
What is tonight's game?
Oh, crap. I'm trying to remember now. Hold
on.
I'm going to pull it up.
Punch it up. It is.
That's an interesting game. That's a pretty fun matchup with the
Colts.
Colts
at Giants.
Colts at Giants is probably worth checking for at least
I'll watch
half.
It for 15 minutes, and then I'm just going to go on Netflix because they put a whole new batch of 30 for 30s on there.
Oh, cool.
Oh, they're so good. I watched the one on the Pistons, Bad Boys. God damn, that was good. And then they had Elway to Marino, the one about that draft class. I think it was like the 83 draft class.
Yeah, Jim Kelly was in there.
Oh, so good. Oh, 30 for 30s.
Can you name
the
other two? There were two other guys in that draft class.
No, I can't, and that's the point.
Kent O'Brien, I think, was the Jets guy. Or Ken O'Brien.
Ken O'Brien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the fifth? Damn.
Todd
Blackledge. I think it was Todd Blackledge. That's right. He won the national title with Penn State. Now he's a crappy announcer on ABC for college football.
Well,
you're welcome. Howard Hyland, killing it in sports trivia.
I'm impressed. I'm like, that's the most impressive thing you've done on Mike in a bit. I am impressed. All right, folks. That was Papa's Football Podcast. I'm John Papa Giorgio. He is Howard Flood. Show's website, pfpod.com. Go there for our every episode. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Please, please, please leave a review. If you're listening to this, if you made it this far, leave us a review. God damn it. Please. Cannot beg enough.
Good one.
Yeah, that too. 5 stars.
It's, if you got a bad one, don't even bother.
It's not golf. The lowest score doesn't win. Go high. Other than that, Papa's Basement Show. I'm going to add show to the end of it now so it doesn't just sound like a pedophile thing. Papa's Basement sounds weird. If I say listen to the Papa's Basement Show, markedly less creepy. So also on iTunes and Stitcher, and at inpapasbasement.com is the Papa's Basement Show. I'm at Papa's Basement on Twitter. Howard is at Vinny Van Gogh. He does a project on Kickstarter.
Indiegogo, man, the Indiegogo. Other crowdfunding source.
Whatever. Whatever's taking a chunk out of your back end. And that's worth it if you are trying to learn copyright law, which is pretty good for podcasters. Because you don't want to like illegally play music and then get sued for all the pennies you're not making. And last but not least, the spookiescomic.com comic I write with a friend of mine. Go and check that out as well. All right, I think we covered everything. Let's get out of here.